Hello, today we're going to discuss Parshas Va'era, but in order to understand it, we need to look at the end of last week's Parsha. At the end of last week's Parsha, Moshe goes into Paro and asks that the Jewish people have time to worship Hashem. Paro does not react kindly, to say the least, and instead increases the workload of the Jewish people. Before, he gave them straw to make the bricks. Now, the Jews had to go out and collect the straw, and they couldn't decrease from their quota of what they needed to produce. The officers tasked with ensuring that the brethren meet their quota were beaten, as they refused to torture the workers. They complained to Moshe for having caused this increased pain. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Hashem. He cries out and says, "Lama hari osa la'am hazeh? Why did you do bad to this nation, that they have harder work? And a lot of them are coming and accusing me of making them suffer. I was the messenger, and I caused this because you sent me to Paro, who doesn't want to send them out of Mitzrayim in any way, shape, or form." What was Moshe Rabbeinu asking? He was saying, according to Rabbeinu Bachai, a fundamental philosophical question. Why does the evil Paro have so much good, and your Jewish nation can't even get a little taste of a little goodness? You only do good to your enemies. Why not us? Why are you only sending bad and trouble? Lama hari osa la'am hazeh? Why are you doing bad to this nation? Is it because of averus that the Jews are doing? Or is it to add reward in the world to come? What is the reason? Hashem answers, "You are going to see right away with your own eyes what will happen. I'm going to punish Paro, and I'm making the situation of the Jews more intense so I can double the reward that is about to start." This is where the next parsha begins. Hashem responds to Moshe's question, "Va'era el Avram, and I appeared to Avram." HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, "I appeared to the Avos, to Avram, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov, and I said to them, my name is Kael Shakai, and I did not tell them that my name is Hashem. Even with the name of Shakai, I gave them what I promised them. Even more so, with the name of Hashem that I am coming to you, I will certainly do this thing that I promised. Therefore, go tell Bnei Israel that I will keep my promise that I swore to them and take them out of Mitzrayim." Sena Urena, at the end of Shmos, explains Hashem's response. Hashem says, "You are not like Avram Avinu. I told Avraham that Yitzchak would be his primary child that would carry on his legacy. And then I told him to bring Yitzchak as an Akedah, as a carbon, to Shechtem as a carbon, and he didn't refuse. Instead, the next morning he got up early to bring Yitzchak as a carbon. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, are going to see what miracles I'm going to do in the land of Egypt, but you won't be bringing this nation into the land of Israel to conquer the 31 kings there." What do the words mean when that Hashem appeared to the Avos with the name Kael Shakai, and to Moshe he appeared with the name of Hashem, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei? To understand this, we need to understand what the name of Hashem means. It is impossible to describe Hashem. Hashem is infinite. He's beyond time, space, and beyond any human understanding. We as human beings are limited in our finite bodies with our finite minds, so we can never truly understand Hashem or describe him. Hashem, though, wants us to know him in some way. He gives us a glimpse of how he interacts with the universe in different ways. This glimpse is what we call the name of Hashem. How we perceive Hashem, how Hashem treats us, is how we can relate to him, and this is Hashem's name. It's his manifestation in this world. The Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, saw how Hashem interacted in the world in a way that can best be described as Kael Shakai. Rabbeinu Bachaye, not quoted by the Tanna Rena, describes this to mean that the Avos saw Hashem through how he acted within nature. The sick were healed, enemies were defeated, but now with open, nature-changing miracles. There was no splitting of the sea, the sun did not stand still. Hashem orchestrated nature to fulfill what he promised them. With Moshe and the Jewish people now, Hashem is going to manifest in an entirely new way, with the name of Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. Hashem is showing that he controls the past, present, and future, Haya, Hove, V'Yihyeh, to create new realities by changing the course of nature. Back to the Tzen Urena. Hashem then tells Moshe he is about to save the Jewish people, and he uses four expressions, each one with a different verb, describing a new reality about to occur. The verbs are v'hutseisi, v'hitzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti. I will take you out, I will save, I will redeem, and I will take. All these are phrases of redemption, and they show the four changes in the status of Bnei Israel that Hashem promised them. For the first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised was that they would be released from their work. The pasuk says, v'hutseisi eschem mitachas tzivlos Mitzrayim, and I will take you out from under the suffering of the Egyptians. I will free you from Egyptian slavery. 6 months before the Exodus, the Jews stopped working. Chazal say on Rosh Hashanah they stopped working, and on the 15th of Nisan they were redeemed. To understand this quote in the Tzenarena, we need to reconcile it with a mission in Edios, Perek Beis, where it says that the judgment on the Mitzrayim lasted 12 months. So the first Makkah started in the month of Nisan, and the Jews were redeemed in the month of Nisan. But while the Makkah started in Nisan, the slavery officially continued for an additional 6 months until the slavery stopped in the month of Tishrei. The second transition that the Jewish people would undergo now was described through the word Vihitzalti, and I will save. Here, Hashem is telling them that they would leave physically from under the rule of the Egyptians. The intention of the phrase Vihitzalti eschem me'avodasam, and I will save you from their work, means they completely left the authority of the Egyptians in the month of Nisan. They were no longer controlled by the nation in any way, not just as slaves, but even as citizens. However, leaving a nation that controlled every facet of a person's life is not so easy. There is still the psychological connection. There is trauma. This new nation would constantly be looking over their shoulder, and that's why there is a third level of freedom. V'ga'alti eschem, I will redeem you. The third thing Hashem told them is that he would split the sea before them. They would see their masters dead on the seashore, and they would know with certainty that they were never going back. As long as a servant's master is alive, the servant is always afraid. Maybe he's going to catch me again to do his work. But if the sea splits and Bnei Israel cross peacefully and the Mitzrayim drown, what could Bnei Israel be afraid of already? And so each person would truly see himself as free. The fourth thing Hashem promised to the Jewish people was to give them a possession, the Torah, and to change their status to a new nation. They would not only be free, they would be Hashem's people. This is what it says, V'lakachti eschem li la'am, and I will take you to me as a nation, that I will take you to be my people through the Torah. Through the Torah, they became the nation of Hashem, because the Torah connects the Jewish people to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to serve him, and not to another god. Each of these changes in status shows Hashem's sensitivity to the Jewish people, where Hashem is taking them through the process slowly so they can adjust, and Hashem is also aware of all the facets of their needs to leave slavery completely. After these four changes in their status, Hashem says he will bring them to Israel. That land will be given to them as a morashah, a legacy. As Hashem said, I have sworn to give Eretz Israel to you as a morashah. The word used is morasha when it could have been written as yerusha, an inheritance. Rabbeinu Bachai says that it is written as morasha and it is not written as yerusha, inheritance, because the difference between a morasha and a yerusha is vast. A yerusha means that I myself inherit. A morasha, a legacy, is something that I will leave to another. Here it's not written as yerusha, but morasha, because Hashem is hinting to them that these people, says the Tzenarena, would not inherit the land because they would die in the desert. It would only be a morasha, a legacy of their sons who inherited the land and not them. This whole generation died in the desert and did not inherit the land, rather their sons did. The word morasha has two implications. First, it's not my choice who I give this possession to. The nation leaving Egypt did not get the land as a yerusha, which would mean that they could give it elsewhere. Instead, it was a morasha, something that belonged to the children independent of what the parents did. The second implication is that we then have a responsibility as the parents. The Torah is also called a morasha. We say in the pasuk, Torah tzivu lanu Moshe morasha kihilas Yaakov. The Torah was commanded to us by Hashem. It is a morasha for the congregation of Yaakov. The Torah is a legacy for our children. If the Torah belongs to our children, then we are obligated to teach it to them so they can appreciate this legacy. Eretz Yisrael likewise is called a morasha, and we need to teach our children about their legacy so they appreciate what they have. Moshe Rabbeinu takes this promise of Hashem, and he goes to Bnei Yisrael and says, I've come to redeem you from Galus. But the Jews respond in a way which is not what we would expect. It says, V'lo shamu al Moshe, and they did not listen to Moshe. They did not pay any attention to the words of Moshe Rabbeinu, Mikotzer ruach, because of being short-tempered. The Tzenarena says they weren't able to breathe from all their sorrows, from all their troubles and stress, and from the amount of hard work that the Mitzrayim had enslaved them with. And Hashem says to Moshe, don't look at this. Don't pay attention to the fact that they weren't listening to you. You continue and go to Paro and tell him that he should send Bnei Yisrael free from their work. Said Moshe, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World, When I came to Bnei Yisrael, I explained to them what you said to tell them. They did not listen to me, even though this was for their own good. For them, it was good news. How is it possible that Paro will listen to me? For him, this is very bad news. Hashem said, even so, you go to Paro and continue your work. Moshe was instructed by Hashem, says the Tzenarena, to give kavod, to give honor to Paro, because in the end, he is a king, and even though he is evil, he is required to treat him with respect. Hashem also commanded Moshe not to be angry with Bnei Yisrael. Understanding this exchange is important. Stress changes us. When we are stressed, we are unavailable to hear good news. We can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. We can't think, and we feel as if we can't breathe. Hashem told Moshe his focus should be on helping the Jewish people by going to Paro rather than trying to convince them he was right. He should have empathy for what they were experiencing. Even though he was not being treated with respect, he still had to treat Paro, an evil man, with whatever respect was due him rather than reflecting the way he was being treated onto someone else. That is what is required of a leader, not to take things personally, to understand where a person is coming from, and to act with dignity, even to those who are in the wrong. At this point in the parsha, there is an abrupt interruption. The Torah pauses to tell us about Moshe Rabbeinu's lineage. It starts by listing the Shvatim of Reuben and Shimon till it gets to Levi. Ela Roshei Beis Avosam. These are the heads of the houses of their families. Since the time had already come that Bnei Yisrael should be saved, the Pasuk lists the Yichus, the lineage, the relationship of every person to their families, to show and make known that Bnei Yisrael were not like the Mitzrayim, who have no genealogy. It gives the Yichus of Moshe and Aaron their lineage, who come from a father and mother who are important, Amram and Yocheved, and it starts counting them from Reuven until it comes to the Shevet of Levi. The Chizkuni writes that it was Ratzon Habore, the will of the Creator, that Moshe and Aaron came from Amram and not from another family. Why? Amram married a woman who was his aunt. And in fact, the Torah does not allow one to marry one's aunt. And since Amram did marry his aunt, in this case, Moshe and Aaron, if they ever came to a place where they would start to feel self-important, where they would start to be arrogant, the nation could tell them, "Why are you all so proud? Isn't your yichus, isn't your lineage that your father married a woman that the Torah didn't want him to marry, meaning an aunt, and you were born from those which the Torah forbade?" This would keep a humility and a perspective for the leaders of Klal Yisrael. Once we meet Aaron and Moshe and understand that they come from an illustrious lineage in an illustrious nation, but they too have imperfections and can't become filled with self-importance, rather they are merely vehicles of Hashem's will, we are ready to relate to them as the leaders of the Jewish people and ready to accept their leadership over the Jewish nation. The expectations of Moshe as a leader and how the Jewish people are meant to relate to him are in sharp contrast with how Paro acts in the Parsha. Hashem said to Moshe, "If Paro will demand of you some sign or wonder, take the stick and throw it before Paro, and then the stick will turn into a live snake." Rabbeinu Bachai writes, quoted by the Tzenarena, that the reason the stick turns into a snake is because Paro is like a snake. What did the snake do? The snake spoke badly about Hashem when he convinced Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadras, the tree of knowledge. He caused Adam HaRishon to sin. So through the snake's behavior, disparaging Hashem, he caused sin to be brought into the world. So too, Paro was similar to a snake, because Paro also said, "Mi Hashem, who is Hashem, that I should listen to his voice? I do not know Hashem." Just like the snake, by nature, is bent on all sides and throws himself once here and once there, so too, Paro once said, "I'm going to send Bnei Yisrael out," and then he says, "I'm not going to send Bnei Yisrael out." He goes from side to side, and the main thing that we know about him is that he doesn't want to listen to the voice of Hashem, and he does not want to submit himself before Hashem. And therefore, he is very similar to the snake who wanted to control Hashem, and also is always changing his mind as long as he doesn't have to listen to Hashem. Only when at the time when the Makkah is upon him will Paro say, "I'll send Bnei Yisrael." But as soon as the Makkah stops, he immediately regrets it and he doesn't send Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. This is in contrast to what we just learned about Jewish leadership. A Jewish leader can't think too much about himself. He is a messenger of Hashem, but he only gets his greatness from Hashem. In contrast, Paro thought so highly about himself that he thought he could question Hashem and had no loyalty if he wasn't under the threat of punishment. Moshe and Aaron go before Paro and before his servants, and Aaron threw the stick before Paro and threw his servants, and the stick became a snake. Paro laughed at this and sent for his magicians, and the magicians also did the same. Their sticks turned into snakes. But in the end, the staff of Aaron swallowed their sticks. This was Rem as a hint that in the end, the Mitzrayim would be swallowed and drowned in the sea because of Bnei Israel. The holiness of the Jewish people, the way we behave, is going to overcome the arrogance and the denial of Hashem that is shown by the Mitzrayim. Vayechazek leiv Paro. Paro's heart hardened, and he did not want to send the Jewish people. So Hashem says to Moshe, Lech al Paro, go to Paro. When should he go to Paro? Go in the morning, very early in the morning, and you'll find him by the river. Paro told everyone that he was a god, and he said, I don't eat, I don't drink, I don't use the bathroom. Every morning, he used to go to the river, and he would go to the bathroom so that the people wouldn't see that he had bodily functions, that he was human. Hashem said to Moshe, go there next to the river where he is found using the bathroom. Go there and say to him that he should send Bnei Israel. And I bet no, he's not going to send Bnei Israel quickly until I bring to him, on him Makas Bechoros. And say to him that you're going to hit the water in the river with a stick, and the water's going to turn to blood, and the fish are going to die, and all the rivers will stink, and they won't be able to drink water from the waters of the Nile. Moshe and Aaron were the messengers of Hashem. They went, they fulfilled this. Everyone knew their family, which had a flaw of an aunt was married to a nephew, which is forbidden in the Torah. Here, Paro tried to hide something that should not have been a secret. He tried to hide the fact that he was human so that he could control other people. Again, a difference between what Jewish leadership means and what the leadership of Paro was trying to become. Hashem said to Moshe, go to Aaron and tell him to take a stick and stretch it on the waters of Mitzrayim, on the Nile and the rivers, and even the water that is found in the wooden vessels and inside the stone vessels. Wherever there is even a little water, it will turn to blood. Why was Aaron commanded to hit the water with a stick to turn it into blood? Why didn't Moshe do this? Why didn't he hit the water with a stick to make the water turn to blood? Hashem said, Moshe was thrown into the river, and the river did not drown Moshe. Should it be that Moshe got something good from the river? It's not right that Moshe should hit the river and turn it from water into blood. Similarly, with the maka of frogs, Moshe did not bring this maka because the frogs came from the water. Only Aaron brought the maka of the frogs. And Moshe didn't bring the maka of Kenim, lice on Mitzrayim, since the ground saved Moshe at the time when Moshe killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand. So the lice came from the ground, so Moshe couldn't hurt the ground either. In last week's parsha, Paro did not remember Yosef and what he had done for the Egyptian people. He had no gratitude. Here, we learn that Moshe could not even hit an inanimate object, as that would be a character flaw, reflecting a lack of gratitude. Paro expected to be honored and treated like a god and felt no connection and reliance on other human beings. When asked for help, he punished his subjects more. In our parsha, Hashem teaches Moshe Rabbeinu the exact opposite. Hashem plans four stages of salvation to help the Jewish people adjust to freedom. He tells Moshe, when Bnei Israel don't listen to you, don't take it personally if the people you are leading ignore you, and if they don't believe you and if they treat you poorly. You cannot be arrogant, and you must have gratitude. These character traits were fundamental for Moshe to lead the Jewish people and to be the one to usher the Jewish people through their stages of salvation, from no longer being enslaved, to leaving the land physically, to being freed psychologically, to finally becoming Hashem's nation. This is the lesson we must also take for ourselves from the Parsha. Our job in life is to help others and to forget our ego. Rather than making ourselves the focus of others' work like Paro did, we must focus on how can we help other people, how can we remain humble in all that we do, and remember that Hashem is the goal of everything in our lives. Have a good Shabbos.